Before we start this episode, I would like to take a minute to tell you about the upcoming Texas Woodworking Festival, where makers and enthusiasts come together to celebrate their love for the craft. Join us for this two-day event filled with fun, creativity, and inspiration. The festival brings together lumberyards, woodworking organizations and clubs, content creators, furniture makers, and tool manufacturers for a weekend of food, drinks, and all things woodworking. This year, the festival is launching educational seminars where you'll have the opportunity to learn from some true masters of the craft, including Frank Straza, Philip Morley, Kim McIntyre, and Andrew Hunter, just to name a few. The festival will be held in Austin, Texas on August 26th and 27th. Visit TexasWoodworkingFestival.com for more information and to buy tickets. Whether you're a seasoned woodworker or just starting out, there's something for everyone at the Texas Woodworking Festival. Hi, and welcome to episode 455 of the MWA podcast. I'm Kyle, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Sean, Mark, and Brian. We got a full house this time. So today, we're excited to have a longtime friend of the show, David Duyard, as our guest. David is an accomplished chairmaker, fine furniture maker, instructor, and just all-around great guy. So welcome back to the show, David.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah. One thing we want to dive into is, you know, your trip you just got back from a few weeks ago to Australia. How long were you in Australia?
2 months.
2 months. So, and I know you met a lot of chair makers, attended the Lost Trades Fair there. So we want to get to all of that goodness. But before we do that, let's dip our toes in the woodworking news. So first off, I wanted to, I think last week we talked about Sean Murphy and some of the turnings and some of the blanks that he has for Windsor chairs. Well, I wanted to give a shout out to Andy Glenn, who has some chair kits for ladderback chairs, red oak chair kits for ladderbacks. And so this is basically everything you need. It's green wood, so everything for the, even the bins there. And full kit is $185. So
I'd say get them while you can.
Yes.
At that price.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I've already expressed my concern to Andy. Sorry, everybody. That's really cheap. I couldn't believe the price when I saw it. So
it, honestly, it makes me want to finally get a fro and go knock one of my neighbor's oaks down. And I could start making a mint just splitting up, you know, sticks and branches.
Well, I don't think he's going to be able to make any money at that price. I think $185 is he's going to be splitting logs all day instead of making chairs.
Mm-hmm. But if it's what you like to do, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's
not
true.
About the money.
Yeah. Maybe his shipping is like $200.
You know? There you go.
Yeah, it's the handling that gets you.
It's $185. Plus taxes and shipping. Yeah. So yeah, that shipping's $300. You did. It's the fine writing that you're missing.
Yeah. I'm glad he's doing it though. I don't know what the price will end up being, but I think it's a valuable thing that he's doing. We're going to be doing this with the parts for the Boggs chairs, the Maria ladderback chairs, but they're not going to be that cheap. Like, no way. The materials themselves are not that much less than $185 to get them in the shop. So, but yeah, like I said, that's a good deal.
So stock up now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get it.
Yeah. It's an issue for a lot of people to find the wood too, you know. Yep. Whether it's the bogs and air dried or whether it's wood out of a log, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was selling, air dried turning blanks, for a while for Windsor chairs, mm-hmm. you know, and it was $100 to ship them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that was before I put them in a box and they were, you know, they're 2-inch turning blanks, 2 to 2 1/8 inch thick. So they were perfect for Windsor chair legs. And, but it was hard because the price essentially more than doubled just to ship.
Yep.
Yeah. You got to buy a lot of legs at the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I bought some from you, David, right?
Yep.
Right after I got into jig making, and they're still sitting on my lumber bench.
They'll probably still turn beautifully.
Oh, I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. They're nice and air dried now.
Yep. Good ovals.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, next up, I wanted to give a shout out to J. Paul Fennell, who won the Professional Outreach Program Merit Award at this year's 2023
Association, American Association of Wood Turners symposium that they had in Louisville, Kentucky last week. And I think this is similar to their Cartouche Award in the wood turning community. And I just wanted to highlight that because I actually went to college with his son.
Oh, wow.
Chris Spinell. That's cool. Yes. Yes, which is kind of interesting because we ran into each other about 10 years ago and I mentioned, hey, yeah, I'm really into woodworking and stuff. He goes, oh, my dad does turnings.
Mm-hmm. He does. I mean, to be honest, this guy does more than turnings. He turns and then he does a whole lot more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're all
the textures and patterns. This is phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. But he told me that, you know, he's got some stuff like he turned some stuff, I believe, for the White House, like one of the trees they had to bring down there. So they sent him the wood from the tree.
Wow. And
he did some turnings and he's done a bunch of stuff like that. Yeah.
Isn't that kind of when you know you made it? When the White House gives you some local, you know, like, hey, this branch came down. Could you make something out of it so we can showcase it? You know, like, okay, I guess I can.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's amazing. It's really, really cool work that link you put in there from the AAW or AA Wood Turners Instagram.
Yeah.
Goes through little videos of his pieces. Phenomenal, phenomenal work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's outstanding stuff. So. Yeah. So anyway, so that's I guess that's my claim to fame. I went to college with his son. So anyway, which is kind of hilarious because I was, you know, a skinny, long haired kid. And Chris Fennell was one of those huge bodybuilders. I swear he spent more time in the gym than he did in classes. Mm-hmm. You know, one of those types. Yeah.
But you knew the guy.
Yeah, I knew the guy. I when we have reunions and stuff, I still run into him every so often. So anyway, but yeah, I never met his father, but I know him. So, but I thought I'd give him a shout out because it's well deserved. And yeah, check out that if you're interested in that. It's the American Association of Wood Turners or AA Wood Turners on Instagram, and they have a lot of posts from their most recent symposium. One day I'm going to go to one of those. It looked like a lot of fun.
I think you might have buried the lead a little bit. Not really, but J. Paul Fennell has his own website. So you can go look at his works at jpaulfennell.com.
Yes.
And he is showcased just on the front page with a bunch of his turnings. Mm-hmm. So yeah, look at this guy. This is really awesome.
Yeah. And I'll post a, you know, as I always do in the description, the episode description, I'll post links to all this stuff. So
does he not have an Instagram page? He just has a website.
Hold on. There is a Instagram here on the side of his page. And let me tell you, Arizona_wood_artist is his Instagram. And it's the same picture, the second post in. So Mr. Fennell is indeed on Instagram, bad on AAW for not linking his Instagram to keep the love going.
Their link game.
Yes.
Instagram link game. Their at game.
Their at game. There you go.
Well, trip in woodworking news would not be complete with a stop at Woodpecker. So here we are. Have they Woodpecker's stealth stop miter sled? So say that three times fast. Anyway, it looks like it's very similar to Incra's miter sled 5000 or 3000 or whatever it is. I think it's 5000. But it's kind of a... I guess a smaller version of that, and it's priced pretty well. It's right now their introductory price is $200.
Mm-hmm.
Now I did go over to IncraSite. They do have something similar to this. It's a smaller version of their big one, and it is around the same price, but you have to have a miter with this. So
a miter, like a gauge to mount gauge on it.
Yeah.
So I would say
what part of this including.
Yeah, Woodpeckers is a miter gauge plus the thing. So, you know, if you're interested in, you know, things like that, I've heard a lot of good things about these type of miter sleds that they kind of replace, you know, a table or traditional table saw sled and stuff like that. So anyway, it's not a bad price at $200 for it.
Yeah, I'm not going to poo-poo this one. I'm going to say, I think about how long it would take to build a miter sled, and I think about how often I would use it. Mm-hmm. And I think a couple $100 is not a bad deal. Maybe I want to sell my table slider thingy that's not super great from SawStop. It takes up a lot of room in the shop.
Maybe. The only downside to me is, I mean, I don't know if that's a half inch or thicker. You're losing that in depth possibility.
That's
true. There is some limitation. Inch, yeah. But I mean, any miter sled's going to have something sliding on the table to shorten the blade capacity. You know, so that's not really a ding on them. Interesting that floating piece, that's not the sled. Is it called the drop? I get what it's doing. And I guess it just has to be free of the blade. I don't love a thing just sitting there.
Well, it's locked in.
Yeah. You bolt it in, right?
You can also put it up tight to the blade, so you get zero clearance on both sides.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true.
Which, you know, I could see that having some value. I don't know. I mean, all the cross cutting I do on my saw is with a dado blade. I cut speed, I guess they're called speed tenons. I don't know. I just, you know, I put a half inch worth of dado blades on and I cut it a few times and I've got a gigantic tenon for a workbench. But I don't cut parts to length because I have a chop saw.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't cut plywood because the saw stop slider is totally worthless for that. Right. So I'm using a track saw. So, you know, something like this may be really what most people could really use.
It's when you're getting into like box or frame making where you need precision cuts. I mean, the zero clearance, and if that's a really accurate, you know, mm-hmm. sled, the dial on it, at least the lockouts, and which I'm assuming it's pretty darn good.
Woodpeckers does that right.
Yeah, exactly. So you want this thing to go through and be dead nuts 90. And that's going to cut your little square for your box, for your frame or your miter, you know, if it's on an angle, you know, that's where it's going to sing. Like you said, that's not a bad price for what it's doing.
Yeah. Mm.
I also like the leaf springs that they used to keep the miter straight in the track. You know, because a lot of these older saws, especially, you know, they through dozens of years, they've worn a groove. They may not be, you know, as accurate as they once were. And this will keep you in the middle of the track.
Yeah. Yeah. I was making a jig for some of the, I was making a jig for my jigs. Anyway, yeah. And I needed to get a miter bar and I went to look for theirs. And I want to say they wanted $70 for it. And I was like, that's a little steep, but, something like that just for the bar. And I'm going, well, for a little bit more, I could have the miter gauge, and for a little bit more than that, I could buy one of these things. So,
that's
how they get you. Just a little bit more, Kyle.
A little bit more. Yes. Well, the only thing that kills me with woodpeckers is her shipping. But anyway, that's a rant for a different day. But this looks
you only
good.
Have to buy it one time.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But you will have to have those little MDF blocks. The sacrificial blocks. You'll have to buy those all the time. Because you can't make those yourself.
No, you can't make those. Yeah, exactly.
You know what though? I mean, it's the longer I do this, the more I realize that some people just don't want to mess with it. It's not what they came to the shop to do that day, and you can't fault them for that. Like I use machines because I don't want to thicken this stuff by hand. Like it's the same thing.
Exactly.
It stops at a different point.
And you can get a 3-pack of those zero clearance things for $9. If I made
$20 shipping, no big deal.
but if I spent the time to make 3 of them, I would probably say, here's $10.
Yeah,
because it's going to take you. All right, cut them out, glue them up, drill the holes, countersink the holes. I mean, you're looking at probably an hour's worth of work.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, I might as well make 100.
Yeah.
And then you're doing it for a day or two. Just to make it worth your time.
Anyway.
It's good to be back, guys. I'm sorry.
No, it's great. It's great. Well, we're going to quiz you in just a second. But before we do that, do we have a Patreon shout out for this week?
We of course do. You know, we always like to give a big shout out to our Patreon supporters. Today, we're going to give that shout out to my dad, Scott Wisniewski. Thanks, Dad.
Hey,
or as you could call him, Scott. And if you would like to be like my dad and support the MWA podcast, go to patreon.com/MWA podcast.
Well, we know your dad loves you, and we know our parents don't love us because that's right. None of them are patrons.
I don't even know if my mom knows I do a podcast. So.
Yeah,
you got one up from us.
I'm not sure my dad knows what a podcast is.
Yeah,
there you go.
Like a radio show.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
We're one of the more wholesome podcasts that he listens to, as far as I can tell. So that's a good thing.
That's good. That's
it's
good.
A family show.
It is
relatively.
And speaking of family, so what's in the shop? So Mark, what are you working on?
Well,
that was a crappy segue, but it kind of worked.
Well, yeah, I mean, sure. So my family was here earlier. No, what am I up to? Okay, well, David and I, and also, and I'm totally blanking on the name. There are actually three Boggs chair classes running concurrently on the same week 2 weeks ago. Eric Cannizzaro was also running one. So we had four students in my shop. How many did you have, David?
I had three.
Had three. And then Eric, I think, had two. So, yeah, we had like nine or 10 people taking a Boggs chair class a couple weeks ago, which was really cool to see.
Wow.
Jeff was really excited. Jeff was here in the shop co-teaching with me. So that is out of my shop, which is... that's a load off, because that was the first time that I've taught the class here or at all. And so there was a lot of jig making and last minute, oh, I forgot to make these practice pieces. And, you know, that was a lot of fun. But it was great to see the students, the change from fear to fun on like day four was so enjoyable to see. People just got it. And
so started, you're saying this was a 4 day class?
Is it? It was a 7 day. Yeah. It felt like 4 days. And then the last 3 days were just fun, but, no, it was really cool. It was really great to see that. It's a lot like the workbench classes that I used to do. And, but this is a little different, just because, I think it requires, for people that haven't made a chair before, it requires a huge transformation, in confidence. So that was fun to do. I've got remote students now, that are starting on their chairs, which is, you know, what I'm trying to build towards for the most part is remote classes. And I've got two new classes that I'm just about to announce, not Boggs chair classes, but a post and rung stool.
Okay.
And a chair class that I'm going to be co-teaching with Chairman Kim.
Okay. Fantastic.
I think he's in the Philippines. Forgive me, Kim, if I got that wrong. But he's going to be coming here in October, November.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be doing one of his chairs here. So the other class, the stool, is actually going to be taking place Sunday through Wednesday after Handworks in Amana.
Mm.
So I've always thought it would be great if there was something else happening up there, you know, right next to Handworks.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to pick up when Handworks stops. We're going to start a chair, a stool making class. And it's basically a really good beginner introduction to post and rung chair making. So those are the big things I need. I've got the stool here. I need to weave in one last piece of cane, a reed, and take pictures of it so that I can show people what it is I'm trying to teach them to build.
So how many more classes is Jeff going to be co-teaching with you?
Right now the plan is one more class in July.
Okay.
And that class is booked. So the plan was to do another class in September. I was just going to do like four students on my own. After this first class, I decided, you know, why don't I choke that down to two students until I do another class? You know, it's the first class. It's always going to be much harder.
Yes.
than the second. It's just one of those exponential curves that drops off pretty quick. So we'll reevaluate after the July class. And if he's like, hey, I'd rather sit in on your next class too, then we'll add two students. So we'll go back up to four. If I improve the way I hope I do, I may go to three students, but I don't think I'll go to four. It's a lot to keep up with. It depends on the skill level of the students. You know, and really just draw knife skills and spoke shave skills. I think everything else is really easy to pick up, but the kind of muscle memory you have to build using a draw knife and a spoke shave just takes repetitions. So you have to coach a little bit more when folks are brand new to those tools.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. You know, the ultimate goal is to, I bought a second drill press and I have two routers, and those are the two big choke points in the class. And the ultimate goal is to be able to do four students each time because it's comfortable in the class. But it's really a matter of the students have to have a very good experience. And if I can't provide that with four students, I'm not going to do it. Mm-hmm. It's really easy to do with two instructors because people get all the attention they need, probably more than they want sometimes. The class in Amana, it's going to be eight students, but it's a very simplified, I mean, it's four straight tapered, you know, round tapered legs and six spindles or rungs, mm-hmm. excuse me. So it's a lot of hand shaping. So it gives people a chance to build up those muscles.
Yeah. That's a good skill building exercise.
Yeah. Like yeah. It's a really, I mean, mm-hmm. if you want to shape, chair parts by hand, it's you know, I see a lot of people teaching a class like this and they talk about like removing the mundane shaping work, and I feel like mm-hmm. that's the fun part. You know, like you could cut 2 days off the class if I just turned all the parts for you, but drilling mortises and assembly is a really small fraction of the fun when it comes to making these chairs. And you know, so I have four shave horses right now. I'm going to sell shave horse seats and workbench seats because you can just as easily shape these parts standing up with a vise, mm-hmm. even if you're using a draw knife. And then I hope to have time to build four more shave horses. And I'm going to offer a discount for people to bring their own. And an even bigger discount if they want to buy one at the class so that I can take it to the class and not bring it back home. But that's what's coming up there. So,
yeah,
that's phenomenal.
Good stuff. Yeah.
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 Well, I got a shave horse in parts in my shop. I have two shave horses, but yeah.
You want to bring it to Handwork? Can you fly it to Handworks?
No, I can't.
Yeah. If,
don't think
if
I knew, go into my carry-on.
If I knew people close by that had shave horses, I would just be like, can I borrow that for a week? Because that, you know, they're going to get used and they're just going to come right back. So, mm-hmm. And that's one of the tasks I have to do. I have some parts laying around here. I need to working out some hanging storage for these shave horses because they're everywhere in the shop right now. They're just every time I turn around, I trip over one.
Yeah.
So I got to find a place to hang them up.
Exactly.
They're reproducing.
Well, I don't know.
I wish they'd do it themselves.
Yeah.
Like gremlins in the middle of the night.
It would be right. So I just get them pour wet. Water on them at midnight or whatever. And shave horses pop out and, you know, start growing in the shop. That'd be great.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll mention this again. I think we mentioned it on a previous podcast, but all four of us will be at Handworks. Yeah. So,
and so look for us because we're going to be doing a live podcast with people in the crowd. So if you want to get your 5 minutes on the show, you know, we'll be interviewing random people from the crowd, and then we're going to stitch it all together and have at least one episode from Handworks. So it should be entertaining.
I got my booth assignment. I'm in the Festhale barn. Are we going to set up a table at the back of my booth? And
yeah, we could do that.
If you're paying for the space, yes.
I'm happy. I mean, I don't know. I don't foresee any time to build a workbench between now and then. Mm-hmm. Or even maybe in the next year or two. So it's going to be a shave horse and maybe one of my workbenches, a small one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still not sure what I'm going to do. I mean, the thing I'm doing right now is teaching. So that's probably what I'll be talking about at the show.
Yeah.
It's just it's really hard to do more than that.
Yeah. Are you going to have like a display or iPad or something just going through some of the videos?
Yeah. That's not a bad idea. Yeah. I'll bring a chair, you know, one of these chairs and the stool, and a shave horse. I think probably the most likely thing I'll have to actually sell, other than spots in classes is shave horses.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually doing a batch, starting a batch this week. So, if you're interested in a cherry one, you should get in touch with me because I have a few that aren't spoken for, I think. But I had a student get home from the class and there's like, I need a shave horse. When can you build one? I said, I'm starting one now. So, you know, it's working out. I guess.
Funny you should ask.
Yeah. I never thought teaching classes would, well, I guess I didn't expect it to happen that quickly that people would want to buy a shave horse immediately after taking a class. I need to just have them in stock.
Yeah.
They just take them home with them. So.
Yeah. That wouldn't be a bad idea. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
I don't have a company to put one in, but I would like to have one.
Come on down, man. You can help me build some. I'll send one home with you.
Yeah, I have one of Mark's shave horses. It's nice. It's
they're very nice.
What version? Is it the actual pinhead?
Yeah, it's a pinhead. Yeah, okay. I think it was pretty early in your pinhead days.
You got one of the very early pinheads. It probably has like steel teeth in the adjuster.
I think it's
instead of the aluminum ones from Pete.
I have to look when I ever take it apart again, but yeah, it works great.
That reminds me, I need to order some badges from Jenny Bauer.
Oh yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Before I get too far down this road. That's that last finishing detail that needs to go on them. I don't put them on the shop horses. But yeah, thanks for reminding me. I was envisioning your shave horse in my head. It's like, oh, there's brass. I need to get brass ordered.
Yes. So.
Yeah. A little brass disc. Yeah.
Cool. Well, Brian, what are you doing in your shop or outside your shop?
Yeah, I am more than happy to say that phase one of the garden renovation is complete. All 14 beds are in, irrigation's plumbed, everything's working. We had to sink 38 of those steel posts to get the arbors connected from bed to bed. And
wow,
you know, I should know that when there's a quarry like 4 miles down the road from me, what my soil is going to be like. And the bottom, I think that I actually did the bottom, I think during the last episode, but the top was just horrendous. Rocks upon rocks. I put a story up. There was a rock that was at least 18 inches wide, 6 inches deep that I could see. And the part that I could see was at least a foot deep. And then it continued when I probed it underneath the bed that I already had filled. And we just gave up because we went to the left of it and modified the plans because I was afraid if I took that humongous granite boulder out, it would cavitate the bed. So I was like, oh, so we just let that go. But we have 8 yards of soil, brought that in, used a tractor, dumped it down, spread it around, grass seed, straw. I think you'll hear a common theme here. We're in a bit of a drought. So I have to go down. My daily activity is to go down in the garden, have a beer and water the grass. To try and get it to grow. But now we're on to the fun stuff. So phase two of the garden is this little side spot, and the top portion of that is going to be where the tractor is going to live. I have a 2-series John Deere. So actually I'm going to make a nice lean-to that's going to be covered on two sides, usually the side that the storms will come in the summer. So I get to do some woodworking and trying to figure out what I'm going to do for the floor because it's a pretty decent incline. It's not terrible. But I don't think I really want to pour a slab there. So I might do one of those plastic grids that you pull apart and then fill with stone so you can park onto it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I'm excited to get to some woodworking type things. And, you know, of course, I'm going to overcomplicate it and add, you know, like flared pieces where they don't need to be. And, you know, make it pretty obvious that a woodworker's lives there. So.
Make it like some green and green or something like that.
Oh yeah. Oh, pillowed ebony pegs. Yes. Yes.
Like a pagoda. Yeah,
I could do that. Oh, but you know what? What's cool is it because it's an outdoor piece and you're gonna see it from afar. That could be like 2x2 ebony pegs. Just make them massive so you can see them from a distance. You know, because otherwise the detail's gonna be lost. Frankly, I mean, you don't even.
This just gets a lot of visibility because there's a golf course right behind me, and the second fairway is right there. Most people's tee shots land right where the garden is, so they're always looking up at it. And
so now you need to make it a joke.
You got to
make it something that they can look at and have a chuckle when they hit their ball there and go, damn it, they're watching.
Yeah. I mean, you can't imagine how many balls I pull out of that garden in a week.
I bet.
Just down there setting up the irrigation, a ball hit 2 feet to just above my head to the right, one of the arbors. And then not even 3 groups later, it ricocheted off the bed that I was right next to.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, man.
Is this a public course?
Yeah, it's public. It's a semi. Yeah, they do have cell memberships. It's a really nice course.
So you just turn around and scream, four left, just four left, yeah. Butthead.
I can't really blame him because in the summertime, the foliage, they can't see me.
Yeah, they don't know you're there, of course.
But after a while, if you live in a golf course, you can hear them coming. you can actually hear the whistle.
And it's PTSD, right? Yeah, you're just like, again.
Exactly. I mean, it's exactly the same concept. It's just a little slower velocity, but you don't turn around. You just duck where you are.
Yep.
And you let it hit what's going to hit.
So you're saying your garden's like a hard hat area then?
Yeah, basically.
Basically. Yeah. A couple years ago, I built a shed. And I went so far as to 3D model it. I got a 3D model of my current mower. I was like, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. This thing fits in that shed. I've since traded in that mower. Not really. I still have it. I need to give it away to somebody. But I got a zero turn mower that still fits, but it takes up a little more space. And now that 8x12 shed ain't big enough anymore. So I've been thinking about a lean-to, not necessarily for the mower, but like I've got wheelbarrows and other implements of destruction that they can't fit in this building. But they sure could lean on it on the outside just to protect it from the elements. And nothing fancy, but just putting something off the backside there. It's in my future, I think. Definitely beneficial.
And the other project that's probably creeping in faster than I'd want it to is for Father's Day, my wife got me an outdoor griddle. It's a Traeger. It's like the Blackstone.
Like the Blackstone kind? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's the same. But when you cook with those, the lid is up. You don't really, really shut the lid very much in those things.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, well, I always cook in the rain and thunderstorms. I'm like, oh, great. Now I got to build an enclosure for that, and
oh boy,
like an outdoor kitchen with a roof over it. So that may be my late summer project. Right now I just want to get this garden over with, move on with life, get to the inside projects that are growing. But my honey-do list is getting way too long, way too long. That's what I got going on. Sean, how about you?
Out in the yard as well. I renovated my front lawn last year, and that was a big ordeal. And thankfully that's continuing. It's getting water. It's growing. My son is having fun mowing stripes into it, all that jazz. But my backyard has been a dust bowl for years. And I planted a section. I'm kind of Tetrising it in areas because when I measured it, I've got over 9,000 square feet that I want to actually plant grass on. That's not currently grass. It's mostly weeds. And that's a shit ton of space to do at once. And I don't have irrigation. I'm on a well. I mean, there's all sorts of concerns there, but I took out basically a rectangular section that's about 75 feet behind my house after a tree line before my bee yard. Like there's just space out there. And I planted about 2,400 square feet. And I'm as we record this, literally day eight. I planted the day after Memorial Day, and it's the 7th of June today. Mm-hmm. And I have almost, I'd say 95% seed has risen there. Oh, yeah.
Not bad.
Wow, you're ahead of me. Yeah, I planted
all that Memorial Day too. And so you got to baby it. And I learned this lesson from the front yard when I did 5,000 square feet all at once, what it took to get it to go. And I researched the hell out of it, with new grass. And this isn't the Scott seed that I bought at a big box store. This is some seed that I got online that's from Oregon and it's pure seed and all this other jazz. But watering three times a day, blah, blah, blah. It is a semi-shaded area. So that helps with the heat because last week, Brian, you mentioned a little bit of a drought. We in Northwest Ohio, we haven't had measurable rain since the third week in May. And the whole month of May, there was less than 3/4 of an inch overall of rainfall, which is our driest May since the 1930s. It's not like, I don't think the farm fields are definitely struggling, but they were approaching drought. We're looking at maybe a 1/2 inch of rain this weekend, which everything's just going to suck up. It's just super dry. I'm watering, to combat that. But thankfully, I'm having some success at that. That's occupying a lot of my mind space for sure, because there's money on the floor, when I do that kind of thing, and you just go
or in the ground,
on the ground. Yeah,
grass seed must have shot up in cost because
it did.
Like a bag of we use Penn State mix where I am because it's really dense. It's nice, grows well in this climate. But a bag that covers like 6,400 square feet is $50. Mm. So if you're doing a big area. And it's between that and you can't just throw grass seed on the ground and expect it to grow. You got to kind of rake it in, you got to cover it. You got to, like Sean said, you got to water it.
Yeah. I mean, I'll blow that out of the water. Unfortunately. I mean, I got something that can, it's going to roughly cover 5,000 square feet and it was just over 200.
Wow.
That's like bougie grass seed.
It is some bougie grass seed. And you know what? If I drive down my street, you know which one's mine.
I was about to say, you got that from Oregon. So yeah. You know what kind of grass
does it have? Five leaves? Yeah, does it have five leaves when it grows?
No.
Kentucky Christmas tree grass?
No, but when you put it on your tongue, it makes you feel funny. It's because that's like it for whatever reason, the Oregon area is the best place for actually growing grass seed, which I've learned a ton about. It's kind of wild, but the specific cultivars and stuff like that, the mixes do a lot of things, but this is something different. And so yes, it's a little bougie. Yeah. But damn it, it's my backyard and I can do what I want. So that's about it. Other than, yeah, summer hit us, and it's not even summer yet, but we hit the 90s for like consecutive days in the first week in June, which is not normal. And all of a sudden we're back to mornings in the 40s. So whatever, it's the Midwest. It always changes. Can't help it.
Well, David and I are probably dealing with the same thing with the smoke right now from the Canadian wildfires. Yeah.
So you guys might be a little bad on that side. We have a warning, like it's considered dangerous now for sensitive people, I think is what it is. I don't know the levels, but yeah, my wife was texting me all day about it because she was mad that I was going to go out and run because the air quality is low. And like, we could shut the doors and just live, in a hermetically sealed house for a while, I guess, but it's not thankfully that bad. But we didn't get, you couldn't see the sky for the last 2 days here.
Yeah.
Like it was all haze.
It's orange. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really wild.
Yeah. So David, are you getting that too?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. It's just hazy. You can't see the sky at all. We saw glimpses of a very red moon last night and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the air quality is horrible.
Hopefully. Here. I mean, the wind picked up and I'm in Ohio. I know I'm not next door, but like it just today from noon to evening, 5 o'clock or so, I saw clouds and a break and blue. It wasn't like deep blue. It wasn't a clear sky, but it was much better than it had been. So hopefully this is moving through. Hopefully. And I don't know, wind systems and active fires and all that obviously have more to do with it than anything. But I wish everyone the best as far as that's concerned right now.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
No. So Kyle, what's in your shop?
My shop, usual, taking care of some orders. However, I did get a lot of feedback on my new and improved template turning, I guess jig, for lack of better words,
yeah,
fixtures, whatever. So I did get a lot of feedback on that, and some people wanted some more construction details. So I'm going to make another video on that. But this week, as we're recording it, I released a video on some chair making drill bits that we sell and some we recommend. As you know, we're not making the stilettos anymore, but we still are making the tridents. So I gave you a couple options on some stiletto replacements that I think are pretty interesting out there. So if you haven't checked that video, go out there and look at it. It's both on my YouTube, my personal YouTube, and on BB Custom Tools YouTube. And
which of those did you send to me?
I sent to you was a trident.
The trident. Okay.
Yeah, our typical trident made for drilling at angles, but the stiletto drill bits are the ones that really have zero blowout or very little tear out on the backside of the hole. And so I gave you there's a couple options there. There's basically a stepped drill made by, well, there's a number of manufacturers, but the ones that I've tested are made by Viking Norseman, and they're really good. I really like them. There's a couple of I guess allowances you have to do for using those, because these are originally designed to drill in metal, but I go over those in the video. And then there are some others that are really, really inexpensive that look similar to our stiletto bits that we used to sell, but they do not perform quite as well. You will get a little bit of tear out using these bits, but if you're going to paint a chair or something like that, they work really well. And you can find those on Amazon. I think you can get they only sell these in, your typical nominal sizes, but I think you can get a pack of four for like $10. And that includes like a 5/16, a 1/4 inch, a 3/8, and a 1/2 inch bit.
Is there anything you can do to them to make them work better?
Like you might try to dub them a little bit, maybe with a strop or something like that. Okay. But I haven't tried. Like I said, you you're going to get a little bit of tear out, but it's nothing gross as far as a big tear out. So, and you're talking when you're drilling, that's on usually going to be on the underside of your arm or bow or something like that. So it's not a big deal. But the other bits that I do that I mentioned, I mean, they are crystal clean on the backside of the hole. The only caveat, there are two caveats with it, and I'll go over those real quick. Number one, they have a kind of a blunt tip. So you need to either take a, you know, fairly large birdcage owl, or what I do is just use an 1/8-inch drill bit and just make a little divot where you're going to drill so you can make sure you see the tip of that in there. And the other thing is actually the entry hole can sometimes have a little fuzz. There's no tear out, it's just fuzz. So you might have to take a swipe or two of the chisel just to take that fuzz down. But besides that, they work extremely well. So I was very impressed with them. You know,
cool.
So anyway, hopefully someday we will get back to the stilettos. Like I said, you know, since Patrick, you know, had his health issues and can't make our drill bits anymore, I did find a manufacturer to make our Trident drill bits. Man, they gave a good college try on doing the stilettos, but they just couldn't pull it off, so to speak. So we went back and forth on it, and they said, yeah, there's just going to have to be too much handwork to get those ground correctly. So anyway, so at that point, you know, for them to do it was just cost prohibitive, you might say, at that point. So anyway, so I'd been looking for some alternatives, and let me tell you, I tested, you know, dozens and dozens of different drill bits before I came out with these two. And, you know, there could be some other stuff out there. So I put that in the video. If you know of something that you would like to recommend, I'd be happy to take it under consideration and, you know, test them out. So I'm always looking for new drill bits. I think that's the curse of a chair maker.
Yeah. Thanks for doing the work, man.
Oh, I try. So, anyway, but like I said, I should have a new video out soon on a little bit more details of my template turning jig, you know, since I kind of revised it and stuff like that. So I'll just show a little bit more construction details. I've made two of them now, one for my 6-degree tapers that I do and one for the 12.8-degree tapers that match the Lee Valley reamer. And I kind of did them a little bit differently. So I think the one that I just finished for the Lee Valley reamer might be a little bit more, I guess, applicable to, you know, most people out there that might want to build the jig. So, but with that, David, what's going on in your shop?
Yeah, well, it's been pretty busy since we got back from Australia. So, and so we had a show and then picked up some orders and had a class and still doing some limited production work for some friends. So I've building a couple of campaign chairs, a couple
of cool
tools. I've got a couple of rockers in progress. Just built a post and rung bench today. So you talked about doing that class in one and made a lot of those. So they're always pretty easy to make. Mm-hmm. So it's been pretty busy, and I've been playing with some new finishes, and so that's a lot of fun as well.
Cool. What finishes are you looking at?
Now, I've been trying out, you know, for boiled linseed oil paints.
Oh yeah.
And they go on really, really nice, but they take forever to cure. You know, so, but I'm playing with that. You know, you thin them out and they cure pretty quick. You got to put on more coats. So then, is it really worth it? And so I'm still playing with that. But that's.
Which brand are you using? I know Chris Horse has been using, was it starts with the L or something?
Allbeck. Yeah, it's a raw linseed oil paint, yeah. I think.
Yep.
Which is even slower.
Yep. I've tried two. One's that one, and then there's another one. They're both sold by Earth and Flax. And the colors are wonderful, you know, and it's the color of the paint is good and it soaks into the wood and all that fun stuff. But so I'm still playing with that. And so that's been fun. And so I say it's been keeping me pretty busy.
Keeping you out of the bars.
Yeah, exactly. Keeping you out of the bars, that's for sure.
Yeah. Away from the brewery anyways.
Yeah. Well, Well, so you, like you said, you just got back from Australia. So tell us a little bit about the trip to Australia. What, first of all, for our listeners, why did you go to Australia? I know, but
Well, my wife's Australian.
Yeah.
And we try to make it back fairly regularly every couple of years because it's a big trip. And we hadn't been back in 5 years because it's because of COVID and things and various reasons. And so we, took a week and took a week vacation in Indonesia and Komodo. And then I guess we spent like 7.5 weeks in Australia, you know, visiting friends and family. And then I spent a month essentially working with, Glenn Rundell. Glenn and Lisa run the Lost Trades Fair, and Nick Found, helping Nick set up his chair making studio. And he's got a fabulous place, you know, outside Melbourne. And we'll spend a lot of time with Nick, and Lisa's family's really close by to there. They're only an hour away. So it was really convenient to be there, and a lot of fun.
Well, cool. Well, I didn't know that you spent a week in Indonesia. So that had to have been pretty cool.
That was pretty cool. Yeah. We went diving in Komodo National Park for a week. And was on a liveaboard. So that was a week of no connections whatsoever, and just eat, sleep, and dive. And yep. So it was pretty good.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. That sounds heavenly. No connections, no Instagram weighing you down. No.
Any of that, which was good. Did get to see a few Komodo dragons, which were pretty cool. So
oh really? You got to see some in the wild, huh?
Yeah. So we saw some
that's cool.
Park, and we got up close to a few. They're really prehistoric looking, pretty wild.
Yeah, I've seen some in some zoos, and there's actually one on Galveston Island. They have this little rainforest exhibit there, and I think they have a Komodo dragon there. So it's a small one. It's not a huge one.
Yeah, no, these are like 10, 12 foot long.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of. Wow.
Yeah, I think the one they have there is like 6 foot. It's not, yeah, it's not that big. Yeah.
Aren't you not supposed to get close to them?
I think during the time, the right time of day when we were there was good. They were
asleep.
We didn't dare get out of the boat. They were pretty active and they were looking pretty hungry. But the other ones we saw, and we stayed on the non-biting end.
Because I hear, I think their saliva has like some sort of bacteria in it or something like that. So if they bite you, that's what gets you.
Yeah, you die from the infection, not from the bite. And they kind of found a way for you to die, then eat you once you're putrefied a little bit or something.
Jeez.
Free carrion.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, so tell us about, let's go on to more pleasant topics. So tell us a little bit about the Lost Trades Fair that you attended. So that's put on by Glenn Runt.
Dell and his wife.
Yeah.
And it's a fabulous event. And they started, I think this was the 10th anniversary. And they gather, I want to say, 160 artisans from all kinds of crafts. So they had wheelwrights, they had tool makers, they had boot makers and hat makers and weavers and knife makers and a couple furniture makers. But if there was a craft, you know, that's kind of been lost and not really taught, then they had them there. And they hold it at the Bendigo Racecourse. So it's a big, grassy, open spread. They can come in, and one of the things, the requirements for being there is that you have to demonstrate your craft the whole time you're there. Otherwise they don't want you. So the whole purpose of this is to promote crafts and to get people to, you know, learn more about crafts. I want to say this is one of the first years they actually had a young guy who was there, saw a blacksmith demonstration there, and is now a blacksmith demonstrating at the Lost Trades Fair.
Oh, that's so cool.
Right.
That is cool.
That is just way cool.
That's just showing that it's working kind of thing. Like,
yeah, exactly.
And it's working. So there were a couple blacksmiths there. There were saw makers and you name the craft, and it was there. And they attracted close to 20,000 people.
Wow.
For the weekend. Right. So this was busy. I mean, we were, I was with Nick, and his tent. And then Glenn had one, and Greg Pennington came over from the States. And there were a couple other chair makers there with Glenn. But we were demonstrating all day long. So we had Shape Forces set up, and we were, you know, making parts, and I was weaving chairs and talking to people. There was just a ton of interest in what's going on, you know. And you know, we were next to some coopers and some carvers, and you know, as a woman, there was carving, you know, carousel horses, you know, and things like so. This really tremendous amount of talent that's there, and everybody's demonstrating time.
Wow, going to
people. Awesome!
And it's about, you know, promoting the craft, and you hear the, you know, the Mike Rowe stories and on how, you know, the crafts have, you know, been systematically excised from the curriculum in today's, you know, in today's schooling. And this is definitely a push to get it back into the public eye to say, these are very worthwhile jobs. And here's, you know, well over 150 people that make a living at crafts.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a tremendous, tremendous event. It was a 3-day event that was there, and attracted all kinds of people. And they were pretty excited because Australia really locked down pretty heavy during COVID, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
they canceled the trades fair last year?
Several years.
Yeah.
And so this is the first year that it was back, and they had obviously a tremendous, a tremendous crowd that showed up for it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And how's Glenn doing? Because I know he had some tough times during COVID too with all the
shop. They had to shut their shop down. And then he had a school but he was leasing, space, I think, was the thing. He lost that space, but he's come back pretty strong. So they have a nice property out in Kyneton and, just outside Melbourne. And, you know, he's built a purpose building, you know, to build chairs and teach chair making. And that is up and running. And he did his first class right around the Lost Straits Fair in that new building. So he's back up and running, which is really, really good to see. And so they're looking forward, and I'll be going back next year.
Oh,
awesome.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be great. That's going to be fantastic. So, yeah. So tell us about Nick Found. So you said he was setting up I swear Australia is just riddled with chair makers, and it's absolutely fantastic.
A lot of talent. I say they're really pushing the craft. So Nick is,
yeah.
I don't know if I'm saying this correctly, but a protege of Glenn's, you know, he spent a lot of time with Glenn. He's a really talented woodworker. And, you know, he's been over to States a couple of times and taken lessons, you know, here and there and some courses, and he's traveled the world. So he has a great perspective, and decided, you know, I don't want to be an industrial, you know, designer anymore. I just want to build chairs. And so he converted a beautiful workshop on his farm, outside Melbourne, and I did his inaugural classes with him. So we did two classes of Jenny Alexander style chair, and you know, he's up and running. We'll start offering more classes, both post and rung, because there's nobody teaching post and rung classes in Australia.
Oh,
and I know there's a few people that have, you know, done some post and rungs and done some Jenny chairs when the book came out, but nobody's really teaching. So he's pretty psyched about that. And I think it complements all the other woodworking programs that are going on. There's some schools, there's a school in Melbourne, there's a school up in Brisbane, you know, and then obviously Glenn is really, really been doing well in teaching chair making as well. So it was fun. I'm really hopeful, and I'll be doing some more classes there next spring in the February, March timeframe. We haven't set dates yet, but we'll probably do two classes somewhere around the Lost Straits Fair, which is their Labor Day, which is like the middle of March.
So where are you going to be teaching? Do you know?
Yeah, we're going to be out. Like I said, I've been working on these other ladder post and rung ladder back designs. And so we'll be teaching those.
Okay.
We brought out some parts when I came, and we were working on when we're there, and we've got to finalize them. So we'll do that, but it's, you know, similar, you know, construction techniques to a Jenny Alexander and a Brian Boggs, you know, style ladder back. Just there's so much variation in that, you know, in the vernacular ladder back chairs from around the country that,
you know, there's a long ways to go and a lot to do with that.
Yeah. Now, what about working with some of the Australian woods they have there?
That's a bit of
yeah, blackwood's a bastard I hear. Beautiful wood, but
wonderful. It's a beautiful, beautiful wood, and it carves absolutely gorgeous. And when it's done, it really looks stunning. You know, but as I had one Australian tell me, it's like, well, everything's dry here, so everything learns how to hold on to water. You know, mm-hmm. So we get there. So I was there a week or so early with Nick setting up. And so we ought to practice bending some of this stuff. We're not doing it for the first time during the class. And we set up, you know, enough rear legs for four chairs, and we bent 8 out of 8. And they said, well, let's do a few more just so we have some extra. And the next day we had 4 out of 4 failures.
Wow.
So the slats, and I'm used to, you know, the slats that we're putting in, whether it's cherry or even ash or oak or any of the woods here, they're in a steamer for 15, 20 minutes. They bend right over a form. They're in a form for 4 minutes, and they go into a drying form. And then I can use them the next day, right? Mm-hmm. They dry that quick. So the blackwood, we broke a dozen slats before we could do it. And they had to go into the steamer for half an hour. You take them out, you kind of flex them and pre-bend them. They go back in the steamer for another half hour. And then when you bend them, you just can't bend them. You got to bend it like over a minute's time, bend it really, really slow, get it in the drying form. And then it takes a week and a half for it to dry.
Wow.
Sitting out.
Do you have to use a backing strap when you bend those?
They're done with a strap.
Yeah, wow.
So, you know, they were still breaking. You know, and it's quarter sawn wood. It should be bending really, really well. And I was taking a heat gun to it to try to get them to dry faster. And it's just, and once they're dry, they're like any other wood, you know, and any other bending that we do, is it behaves beautifully and it looks beautiful and it carves wonderful. But that drying process, even after 3 weeks, you know, you could drill a hole into the chair leg and you're pulling out, you can almost wring out the moisture out of the shavings.
Wow.
Oh.
This is the ones that you bent?
Yeah. And these are the ones we bent.
Wow. Okay. And so you're not using like a closet or.
In the sun, they were in, you know, wind, it didn't matter. We were putting the front legs into a kiln for a week, and it was still the same way. Wow. We tried. That said, we still did a lot of green wood construction, you know. So we, you know, the rungs were not a problem. They just took a couple days to dry out in the kiln, you know. But they're pretty thin on a Jenny chair, and they weren't a problem. They got super dried, so you had a super dry tank going into a wet mortise that was just far wetter than anything I've ever made.
Were you splitting these parts out of the log? Is that why?
Yeah.
Okay. So these were not air dried beforehand. They were fresh splits.
Yeah. Fresh splits. Okay. You know, don't make a chair from a tree.
Right.
Kind of thing. But you know, when you do it, even in here with the oak, you know, yeah, it takes a few days for it to dry, but they dried pretty quick. Once you get them down into parts. So that was it was a challenge, but it's absolutely beautiful, beautiful wood. And I think on my Instagram feed you can see some of the chairs that we made, and the colors in the wood, the yellows and the greens and the browns, just it's beautiful.
Yeah. So it sounds like if you're teaching that class, you got to kind of have one class split out the parts for the next class, but and that kind of thing.
Yeah, which is, well, that's what I do today anyways. Yeah. You know, have everything pre-bent for a class now, and then that class, you know, learns how to mill it out, how to get all the parts, makes the parts, and then they bend for the next class. Mm-hmm. And that's worked really, really well for me over the years. So we were doing that anyways, but it was just amazing how well this wood retained the moisture in it. You know, that part was challenging, but like I said, it was beautiful. And it's getting harder and harder to get wood there as well, because the logging in Victoria, the state of Victoria, which is southeast Australia, has pretty much banned the logging. And I think I'm saying that correctly. So for the past little bit, you were able to take trees that came down in storms and other ways But now there's a total ban on logging in the state of Victoria. What these guys are going to do around chair making and getting, you know, air dried wood or wood or any of that stuff, because it's become a problem for them. And I don't know enough to understand the, you know, the environmental practice and why they're doing this. But you know, it's what they're up against at this point.
Yeah. Well, that's sorry for chair making, but yeah, I don't really know what's going on. But so what's their import strategy as far as woods and stuff like that? Because I know like Burn and stuff uses some kiln dried wood for his chairs and stuff like that.
Ash and other woods, and walnut and things like that. And they're importing it. It's just all kiln dried, right? Mm-hmm. It's just got to be kiln dried and, you know, certified bug free. Essentially, they're really strict on all their agricultural imports, you know, for fear of bringing foreign bugs into the country, which is understandable. So, you know, most of the furniture makers are using kiln dried and they bend it. And, you know, what they'll do is soak it for, you know, 3 to 5 days before they bend it. You know, we talked quite a bit with Burn Chanley while I was there, you know, and you know, about how he does a lot of his bendings. He does some pretty wild bendings for his newer Windsor chairs, and that's essentially what he does. You know, he has a beautiful bending platform with a boat winch essentially, and everything is you know, braced and backed and soaked for 5 days and steamed for hours, and it bends fine.
Yeah, I did that with some kiln dried red oak, kind of followed his recipe and soaked the stuff for a week, I think, or maybe even longer. And then, you know, steamed it for, you know, I don't know, at least a couple hours. And then I, used one of those boat winch bending fixtures. And it came out well. Let's see, 2 out of 3 came out well.
Yeah.
Which you can't argue with that, doing kiln dried wood.
It's risky business, this thing we do.
Yeah.
You know, it still amazes me that I still get failures quite a bit in bending, you know, doing the exact same thing over and over and over again. And even from the same board or the same log, you know, I'll get that bend absolutely perfectly and completely effortlessly. And all of a sudden there's one that's just like, it's not going to bend at all. So I don't know what to say. Then the bottom, make extras.
Yeah. The log, the wood does what the wood wants.
Yeah.
Nature's revenge.
Yeah.
Well, so did you visit any other chair makers while you were in Australia? You mentioned Burn.
We did had a wonderful visit in Burns. He moved into a new shop. It's a wonderful space he's sharing with some wonderful furniture makers. And he's back up teaching in his new shop. We visited Burn. But there's quite a few, you know, that are really nice, you know, Remy, Treme, Young is a Frenchman, you know, emigrated into Australia. He's building some beautiful, beautiful stuff, as is Will Burke. You know, David De La Cruz is making some nice furniture, as is Peter Rhodes. And we also got to spend some good time with John Grant. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know John. He's from Tasmania. He's been building chairs for a long time. He's in the States now. He was, I think he spent some time with Curtis Buchanan, and he was down with David and Brandy at Silver River Chairs learning, doing some weaving and stuff like that. And he just took a class with Greg Pennington. I think he's going to go back and teach at Greg's next year. And I know he's going to come up my way, and we're hoping to spend some time together when he's in the States next year. But John's a wonderful guy, a wealth of knowledge on chair making and even the chair making tradition in Tasmania, you know, which has some pretty wild looking chairs that are specific to Tasmania. And so we got to spend some time with John and his shop and see what he's doing and how they do things, and compared notes on how do you do things, how do you measure things, how do you get angles, you know, the chair nerd talk.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was wonderful, and he's a wonderful cook, and he cooked us dinner, and it was we had a wonderful time.
Yeah, yeah, Fantastic. Well, is there anything that would just blew you away when you were in Australia this time? I know you've been there many a times, but
I think, you know, I always love, you know, the forest that we're in. I guess there are temperate forests that you get a bunch of rain, but just dead straight eucalypts, you know, that are 60, 80 foot tall without a branch, you know, are absolutely gorgeous. And I say Lisa's folks live in an area called the Dandenongs, which is all really hilly, heavily forested, and it's just gorgeous. But I said, I think the thing that blew me away was the Lost Straits Fair, because it was just all the talent that was in that area at one time was absolutely incredible.
We need to do something like that here in the States.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
You know, you have like Colonial Williamsburg, and you have Sturbridge Village, and you have the Eric Sloan Museum, and they talk about crafts, and they have like individual people doing demonstrations, you know, and then you get a few of the craft fairs where they have, you know, people bringing their crafts there. But there is no place that I know of where people are coming and demonstrating the craft to share knowledge, right? Share knowledge, right? Knowledge that's not shared is lost. And the key is how do you share it for, you know, the next generation, so they look, because the designs and the way they did things were fabulous. You know, we went to on a previous trip, we went to a place called Sovereign Hill, which I guess is like a Williamsburg. It's an old gold mining town in Australia, and Glenn got us into kind of the backstage to see how things are made. And there's a carriage making shop. So here's this huge carriage, and I lean up against it, and it moved, right? It moved effortlessly, you know, and here's a huge carriage that's meant to be pulled by four horses, and you can push it with one hand without any effort. So they knew how to balance things. They knew how to make things, knew how to bend wood. They knew how to do all these things. So where's all that knowledge? You know, and how do we bring that forward to the next generation?
Yeah, that is cool. Well, I don't know. Maybe let's get together. We'll talk about it. Maybe we can do our own little lost trades.
NWA lost trades.
I'm sure Glenn would love to consult on something like that. I met him for the first time at Greg Pennington's place, we spent a lot of time talking about that. This was way before COVID.
Yeah,
because it's such a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's a big undertaking. You got to have the right person or people, you know, to lead something like that. Cause it's, well, you got to herd cats too, right? You got to get craftspeople to show up on time to do stuff. And yeah.
Venue, it's, you know, the food and the bathrooms and making sure everybody's taken care of and having the craftspeople there and the, you know, places for people to stay. You have 150 craftspeople descending upon a town that all need hotel, you know,
and 20,000 people coming after that.
Yeah. And advertising that goes around it to make sure that it's promoted. I mean, the job that the Rundells do is just unbelievable in creating this. And it's just, and it's just wild. And they, you know, getting together, it's a big collective thing. People get in and they're setting up, and when they're done setting up, they go help somebody else set up, you know, and
that's cool.
You know, and you got somebody driving around with the forklift to help move all the blacksmith equipment and workbenches and lathes, and, you know, people setting up tents and, you know, name it, and it's there. So it was a tremendous camaraderie among all the craftspeople that were there. It was just spectacular to see.
That's absolutely great. Yeah. Well, speaking of crafts fair, tell us about the Smithsonian crafts fair you were invited to be a part of.
Yeah. It's a jury craft show. It's held in the National Museum building in downtown DC, and there's about 120 crafts people that they bring in, you know, various crafts, jewelers, you know, clothing makers. There weren't that many furniture makers. There were only like three or four of us that were there. There was a couple turners that were spectacular. You know, and it's a highly juried show. So, you know, you go by and they view your work and what you do as a body of work. And you get to go, and it was fabulous. It was a whole new crowd for me, because I don't really exhibit outside of the kind of the Northeast area. So it's tremendous to have people come in and, you know, see the chairs and handmade and you know, the again, they're promoting the handmade craft,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is awfully nice. And they bring in the patrons from the Smithsonian, and the Smithsonian itself attracts just a huge crowd. So it's wonderful to be able to take part of it. It's really quite an honor to be accepted to be able to be there. And it was a wonderful weekend. So we're like a 4.5-day show. So it's more than a weekend.
Sounds phenomenal though.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, did you get time to tour the rest of the Smithsonian while you were there?
Not really. We got into the Portrait Museum and, got into that a little bit, but we really didn't get a chance to view any of the other museums. I think if we were to go back next year, then I'll take a couple extra days just to be able to go through the museums and things. Or I think we probably just will head down and take 4 or 5 days on our mm-hmm. run.
Any other? Yeah, you need like 2 weeks. There's so many.
Yeah, you need. Let's see, about 5 years ago, I think the last couple of years I was at work before I retired, there was a conference in DC and took my wife to it, and we stayed over a week. And that was our primary thing, is to go to the Smithsonian and do all the museums. And we did it for 6 days and still just barely touched the surface of what you can see there.
Yeah. That's and insane. I don't know how people go for more than like half a day. It's just like stimulus overload going on when you're mm-hmm. in a museum like that, because there's so many things to look at, things to read, things to think about. Yeah.
For us around here, that's, it's like the junior high, the eighth grade graduation gets a trip to DC and they're awesome. Ferried from Gettysburg down and into DC, but it's so quick, you know, they don't, you know, see everything. And I've never got the chance. And I can't say my whole life I wanted to, but definitely in my older years, I have definitely wanted to go see that kind of stuff. Like mm-hmm. it sounds phenomenal. It's just, yeah, the time that it would take to be satisfied that you've seen it all is a lot.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It's like I said, it's a week. We spent a week there and still, and you know, little known secret, the basement cafeterias and a lot of the buildings do sell beer.
Good to know.
You get a little recharge.
Yeah.
Your burnout.
Right. You have a lot of good food there. And, you know, which is nice, you know, but even just being in the National Building is just incredible.
Oh yeah. Like, I saw some of the pictures. Yeah.
Yeah. Just awe inspiring building, you know, the building itself. And it's really well run, and they take all the proceeds from the fair and invest it in, the research grants for the Smithsonian. So everything that comes out of that goes back into, you know, promoting the basic research funded by the Smithsonian.
Oh, that's cool.
Do they purchase any of the items to put into their collection during the event, or?
No, they hold an auction mm-hmm. that the craftspeople donate to, and then okay. they proceeds from that, and then the entrance fees as well to get into the show. They use for their, and it's 100%. You know, run by volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so all that money goes right back into the Smithsonian to promote research.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. So you have to pay to go to the craft fair then.
Yeah, yeah. I want to say it was like $20 to get in.
Okay.
Yeah. Wait, $20 as an attendee or as a vendor?
As an attendee.
Yeah. As an attendee. You paid an entrance fee to apply, probably to exhibit, right? And then, so you're as a business person, you're just hoping to sell stuff while you're there.
Yeah, sell some stuff. We did sell a few things while I was there, and I did take a few orders. So I'm working on some of those commissions now. So like I said, it was nice. It was a good combination. It was a really good show, but
pretty awesome way to spend some marketing money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and for all our listeners out there, if you didn't know, if you do go to the Smithsonian museums, they are totally free. Some of the things they might put on, like the craft fair or some other things they might charge for,
special events,
but your basic museum. Yeah. Everything's free. So, which is incredible to see all the stuff you can see there for basically nothing.
Yeah, you know, they pay to park. That's about it.
And they have beer for sale in the basement.
I will say there is a very nice Holiday Inn that's real close to the mall, and everything's within walking distance, depending on your definition of walking distance.
Yeah. did you get out to the Smithsonian portion that's out by the airport where the space shuttle and the SR-71 are housed?
Never made.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, there are parks and things, you know, close around the National Building up in that, I guess it's in the Northwest. But otherwise, yeah, we didn't make it anywhere near any of the government buildings or, you know, any of the museum pieces that were there, which there just wasn't the time.
Yeah.
You know, cause we came back from Australia and I had, I don't know, 3 weeks to get ready, finished getting ready for the show. Had a class in between that time as well. So I was pretty well scrambling. I tried to do as much prep as I could before we left, but I was still scrambling.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Well, it looked like a fascinating time and, yeah. So you plan on going back next year if they invite you?
Yeah. Yeah. If I get the invitation back, you know, it's just always a thrill, like with Lost Trades and this, is to be surrounded by incredibly talented people.
Yeah.
And
inspiring, I'm sure.
Yeah. So it's very, very inspiring to go back with a new get back into the shop, and you got a new found energy to, you know, create and look at new things and all that. So it's been, a fun kickoff to the year. Hope I can keep up the pace.
Oh, well, did you buy anything when you were there?
No, we didn't.
Okay. Just curious if any of the other fellow crafts and you couldn't resist. So
you made a trade at a previous show last year, right? Or end of the year of last year.
Mike Jury is a wonderful furniture maker. He's won a bunch of awards for his furniture.
Yeah, Mike's been on our show.
And I traded a chair with him for one of my chairs, and so it's good, and I'm hoping to see Mike this summer sometime. He spends a bunch of time up in the Berkshires during the summer, so hoping to be able to catch up and spend some time with him and his wife, and so it'll be a lot of fun. Yeah, but my goal is to have, you know, to trade and to have handmade in the house. So if I like something from a, you know, craftsperson, then I'll make trades.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think Bearding on the show before too, right?
Who's that?
Evan Bearding.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We've had Evan. Yeah.
I have Evan's chairs.
Yeah.
So that I also made a trade for. It's one of my little rockers, and I traded it for one of his chairs.
Well, that's fantastic. Cool. Well, before we let you go, tell us about any upcoming classes you have or anything like that that you'd like to promote.
Yeah, I've got, only got a few more classes coming up. I've got one in August. That's a Brian Bach intro class, and that's full. I've got a Windsor chair class in September. That has an opening in it. And then after that, I have Brian Boggs, Brea rocking chair class in November. And that class is also full. So I'll probably get next year's classes out, in the August timeframe, give some people to think about what they want to do next year. But I'll be back in Australia teaching some postum rung chairs, you know, in the late February, March timeframe. And then I'll, my plan is to probably do another 6 or 7 classes here in the States sometime as well.
Oh.
I do private classes as well, you know, based on, availability and things along those lines.
Well, I'm just going to add to your bio that, you know, you're now an international woodworking chair making instructor. Yes.
Yeah. Indeed.
Yep. Indeed. Indeed. This is fantastic. Well, are we going to see you at Handworks, I hope?
I don't know. That's usually on Labor Day weekend, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And our local Woodworkers Guild, which is pretty active, and we raise a lot of money for the community, that is their show.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So I kind of let them know this year I may or may not be exhibiting there, but it's a very active group and guild, and they do a lot of teaching and a lot of wonderful things for the community. So they've they give out $10,000 a year in scholarships to new furniture makers.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah. So they, you know, whether you want to spend, you know, something on Mark Adams or get into North Bennett Street School or any of the other big programs, you know, they have scholarship funds and they give out four $2,500 scholarships every year. So generates the money for those scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Right. So it goes back to our talk on how do we promote the craft?
Yeah.
It's giving back to the community so that I can promote the craft. Otherwise, I would love to go to Handworks, and I'm really torn. But I would love to go.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what the future holds. But if you're there, it'd be great to visit with you there. And you know, word on the street is this might be the last one, but we'll see.
Yeah,
they say that every year.
It spurs attendance, you know.
Yeah.
After we get there, they might
say, sorry.
No more.
Yeah. After we're there,
yeah.
After,
yeah, well,
like,
yeah,
we're shutting this down.
We are going to close the bar. Is that what you're saying? Like, we're going to shut it down?
our you know,
close the barn.
Close the yes. barn. There you go.
Exactly.
Well, our reputation will precede us.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to our fortnightly beer choices. So I'll start us off. I want to preface this. I'm drinking Guinness tonight, but I will recommend the Dogfish Head 120-minute aged in Utopia barrels beer.
Mm.
Yes. So
that's different than
the regular 120. So
yeah, well, I think it's only 120 they have out now, but this is aged in the barrels that the Sam Adams uses to make their Utopias beer.
Oh, that's super heavy.
Yeah, that's super heavy. So they're basically taking their 120 and aging it in those barrels. Yes. So you get a little bit of that flavor. Like, I've never had a Utopia, so I don't know what that tastes like, but yes.
I've tasted it and it's wine. It's heavy, yeah. Heavy wine.
Is mm-hmm. it like Bock beer? The beer that's at the very bottom
it's,
of the barrel?
It's like a quadruple Bock.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I'm remembering it right, that Utopia rings in at like 24% APV.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Like a port.
Yeah. So it is. It's port.
Yeah.
But it's beer.
Ooh, that's a sipper.
Yeah, it's a sipper for sure. And so the you can guarantee those barrels are just ripe with everything. So I got to see if I can find that locally. That would be something.
Yeah. I think it's pretty much nationwide as far as where they're distributed.
I will say, if you've got it down there, then I hopefully get it here.
Man, I can't drink the 120 anymore. It's got too much going on.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. I had one.
60 is a sweet spot.
Yeah. This was.
I like the 90, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a special bar we go to occasionally that just has all kinds of interesting beers, mm-hmm. and they had that. And I said, I'll have one.
Mm-hmm. Did that knock you back about half $9 for a 4-ounce pour?
I'm not going to say how much it cost me, but
was it a 4-ounce pour?
No. It was more than that. It was probably 8 ounce or something like that.
Okay.
But yeah.
It's definitely not a 12. Like there's no call.
It's a lot
for that pour. That's heavy. That's super heavy.
But it was interesting. It was interesting. So
I got to get some because my wife likes the 120. Yeah. I don't mind it. We've had it on vacation and it is hella expensive when you get it on location. But
I think it's about somewhere in the neighborhood of like 20 to 30 bucks for a 4-pack.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
So. But that 4-pack will last you a weekend. Mm-hmm. I mean,
that's or a more. One and done.
Yeah,
it is a one and done
with
sure.
a friend.
Yes, with a friend to share. Absolutely.
I think I have a 4-pack of 120 in a cabinet here in the shop that I brought back from the last Handworks. That's so, just been sitting back there, you know.
Some time ago.
Well, you need to bring it to this Handworks.
It'll age, right?
Yeah, kind of. Diami actually said, the best 75-minute, because they make a 75, which is between 60 and 90, that is to mix half of a 120 or half a 90 and half of a 60 to make a 75. And so you there's something here that we can blend. I honestly might have some. No, I've got some Founders stuff that's aging. Oh, we're getting into the weeds. That would be something. But bring it. We'll find out what we can do.
When it gets closer, I'll forget.
Yeah,
you got it.
So Brian, what are you drinking?
One of my friends recently went up to up towards David's area. They went up to Massachusetts, Vermont, came down through Connecticut. So we're drinking a beer called Vicinity. It's from Trillium Brewing, which is up in Massachusetts. Trillium, if you've never been there, it's a really cool brewery, decent food, and almost every single beer they make is fantastic.
I've had Trillium. I don't think I've had this one, but yeah, it's all very good.
If I can get up there, I have to go up there next week, but if I get up there closer to Handworks, I'll try and bring some to Handworks. But it's everything. They have sours. They have double IPAs. This Vicinity is a double IPA. It's good. It's not too hoppy. We're really enjoying this one. It's a 8%. Yeah, 8% alcohol. So it's not too bad
for a double.
Yeah, double. Yeah. But yeah, where David and I live, it's the primo spot for beer in the country. So
It's shifted. It's shifted to New England.
from Denver to New England.
Yep.
Yeah. I feel bad for the people in Texas. You know, they got nothing down there.
Yeah. I know. We got nothing.
Southpaw or?
Down here we got Carbach, which is a big local brewery. But there's a bunch of breweries. But now
Carbach is the Yingling of Texas.
Yeah. But now it's like the, now it's all about the craft distilleries around here.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Tito's.
Yeah. Sean, what are you drinking?
Not an IPA, but I did go I said Fatheads, and it's not Dogfish Heads. Why did I say that? It's Dogfish Heads. I got Dogfish Heads, the Sequench Ale, which is something that they bring out annually, and it's kind of a summer sour, nice and citrus. And so I pick it up when I see it, especially when it's getting warm.
Yeah, I saw that the last time I was in our big liquor store. I saw some Sequench. So,
So David, what are you sipping on?
I have a Two Roads Crushable India Pale Ale.
Crushable. That's better than sessionable. That's crushable.
That means, is it citrusy?
No, it's really not. It's Two Roads. They're a little heaven. Crushable IPA. So it's one hell of a heavenly brew. A local go-to. I think they're out of Stratford, Connecticut, but they're pretty well distributed throughout this area. So you can find them. They make a whole variety of beers, and they do pretty good.
Awesome. Nice.
That is nice. That is nice. Yep. I'm surprised it wouldn't. What's the brewery near you?
Yes. Yeah. It's usually. I'm out at the moment, and yep. I'm too lazy to walk the half mile down the road from the shop.
Oh, you poor thing.
Yeah.
I mean, for our listeners, first-time listeners that do not know David and where he's located at, but he's got a brewery a half a mile down the road. He's got a ski resort about half a mile or mile or two away from him. And then what, across the road, you have like one of the best trout fishing streams. Yeah.
David, I mean, if I came to visit and we spent half the day skiing and the other half the day making chairs, how much time would I need to set aside for that trip?
As long as you want to come.
It's a bargain.
It depends if he's vacationing in Australia. You've got to.
Well, yeah. Well, maybe I could house sit for a week.
There you go.
Because you're going to be there in what, February, March? That's great ski season.
Yeah.
Go wherever you want. We'll take care of the house for you.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll make sure the pipes don't freeze. Plants from dying.
Mark, you could house sit and also teach a couple of classes out of his shop, pay him a little rent.
That's even better. I think we got something going here. Wait, I have a shop here. I don't know about that, but.
Yeah, but you don't have a trophy trout stream in a ski area.
Well, that's true. It's true.
Move your shop.
But I wouldn't have time to ski if I was teaching.
Well, you know, I get up early in the winter. I'll get up early, and get a couple hours in the shop. The lift's open at 9, get there at 9. Nobody's there. Ski for an hour and a half. Come back to the shop. You haven't missed anything.
So that sounds like the formula for a new class format.
Could be, but I can't have anybody getting hurt in class, so.
No, the skiing is on their own. They're on the mountain. They're on the mountain's liability.
Yeah.
We take a break. I'm going skiing. You're welcome to come.
Yeah.
But class starts at 6. It goes to 8:30, and then it starts back up at 11. And then there could be fishing or there could be skiing, depending on the season.
Yeah, I've had students come that, they fish before class. They'll head out at noon and fish, and then they'll fish in the evening. You know, so
sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, not a bad deal.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, if folks want to check out where they can, you know, get a little fishing in with their chair making, where should they go to, David?
Yeah, well, Instagram, it's DDuyard Chairmaker. And otherwise, it's DavidDuyardChairmaker.com, D-O-U-Y-A-R-D.
Fantastic. Mark, where can folks find you?
Well, you can find the latest video on my YouTube channel, Plate 11, or Joint Effort. They should both get you there. And if you want to know when those videos come out, go to jointeffort.net/MWA and sign up for my newsletter. Brian, what about you?
Instagram is where you can find me at Obst Woodworks, and Obst is just O-B-S-T. Sean, how about you? I'm sorry. Oh, Kyle. Let's go to Kyle.
Okay, fantastic. I'll I'll fill in.
Somebody,
yeah,
anybody.
Yeah. I mean, I can do Sean too if you want me to. But anyway. But you can always find me on Instagram at Barton.Kyle or BB Custom Tools, bbcustomtools.com, or on YouTube under BB Custom Tools or Kyle Barton. Sean, what about yourself?
Oh, per usual, you can find me on most social medias at SeanW78.
And do we have any reviews?
We do. Regarding the MWA podcast number 453 with Philip Morley. First review here is from Rex Hansen, who's a good friend of the show and a pretty recent guest.
Yeah, we're going to have him back on. He just graduated, I believe. From
That's
North
right,
Bennett
yeah.
Street.
He's, yeah. He's our North Bennett Street.
Yeah. He's going to be in our next round of guests. So awesome. Looking forward to that.
So Rex says, great episode. Thanks, Phil and the MWA team. Our next review here is from Ramon Artful. If you don't know Ramon on Instagram, he's a super talented guy. He's got a couple nice products. I use his Domino Dock a lot. And he's taught me a lot about magnets, of all things.
Yes, he has.
He loves magnets.
T-shirts and magnets, man.
Yeah. But the dude's super talented. Yes. He yells, Phil! And with the strong and fire emoji. And then our last review here is from Texas Sin _ Woodworker, who is Michael Arbogast. He gives a clap emoji. I looked at his Instagram. We might have a niche following here because he makes cutting boards and bowls, which were beautiful. But he's also in the film and television industry. He makes props.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And I know we had another follower that was a producer. So
no, he's a director.
A director. Director. Yes. So, yeah. So we apparently have a niche film industry following for the podcast for whatever odd reason. So
it was.
I think we need to get that guy on the show.
Yeah, we should have. We could
talk to a prop maker woodworker. That sounds interesting.
I agree with that. Yeah, but if you would like to leave us a review, you know, just tell us good things and bad things about what we're doing here. You can leave them on the MWA podcast Instagram. You can spam Kyle's Instagram for Kyle Barton. Or you can leave us a 5-star review on wherever you happen to download your podcast, whether it be iTunes, Stitcher, those kinds of places. And we would love to get your feedback.
And that just about wraps it up for this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. And while you're there, please leave us a review. You can follow us on Instagram at MWA_podcast. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go over to patreon.com/MWA podcast. But the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.